The following is a message from HeritageFoodsUSA.com. The difference between wild Alaskan salmon and farmed Atlantic salmon is just as great as the differences between commodity pork and heritage breed pork. Huge! HeritageFoodsUSA.com is lining up a major social buy of sustainably harvested salmon in July and offering it at a phenomenal price to consumers. Check out HeritageFoodsUSA.com for more details on how to get in on this opportunity. Experience salmon the way it should be.
Hello, Mr. and Mrs. America, from border to border, coast to coast, and all the ships at sea. Streaming live from the County of Kings, Brooklyn, New York City, on the Heritage Radio Network. Are you ready for the fastest half hour on the internet today? It's the Mike and Judy Show, spanning the globe for high-minded hijinks and lowbrow kicks to bring you the best in sex, drugs, rock and roll, and nuclear fission. They're too bad for radio and too good-looking for television. And now, here they are, to pluck the low-hanging fruit of the literati, your hosts, Mike Edison and Judy McGuire.
Hello, it's Judy McGuire here with my co-host, Mike Edison, who is a little worse for the wear. Why is that, Mike?
Well, I've been partying, celebrating the new legalization of gay marriage in New York, what's clearly the central civil rights issue of our generation. And, you know, I'm totally straight, but I think I'm, like, totally cool enough to be gay.
I don't know about that. I see the way you're dressed, Mike.
I make a lovely Dijon vinaigrette. As you know, I'm a big professional wrestling fan, and what is wrestling after all, except for a couple of sweaty men rolling around,
exactly.
Half-naked men in tights.
Nice.
Big on the ballet and the opera.
You could totally pass. And we're joined here by Marty Beckerman. Marty's a funny man and the author of several books, including Democracy, Generation Slut, and the brand new The Hemingway, How to Unleash the Booze-Inhaling, Animal-Slaughtering, Hairy-Chested, Retrosexual Within, Just Like Papa. Welcome, Marty.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Right on. And later, I think we're going to play Canis Mas Macho with Marty. Truly, today a show of magic and mayhem.
And macho.
And macho.
So, we're
expecting a call from a very special, scary person today.
Ooh.
And hopefully he'll come through.
and we won't be
from beyond the grave. But meanwhile, Marty, got your new book out, Hemingway. Yeah, why don't you fill us in on what this whole macho movement is?
Well, the book is The Hemingway. It's a guide to life and masculinity based on the works of Ernest Hemingway, history's ultimate man. And really, the book is getting at men today. We use Facebook, we use Twitter, we use Wikipedia and Google and Foursquare, on and on. We know how to do all this stuff, but we don't actually know how to do anything that doesn't involve technology. If you dropped us in the middle of the woods, we would be dead in half an hour because we can't hunt, we can't fish, we can't build shelter, we can't start a fire. We can't do anything the average Cub Scout can do.
I got news for you. It's worse than that. People don't even know how to knock on their neighbor's door and ask for a cup of sugar anymore because they're all sitting at their tables communicating on their prosthetics, their electronic prosthetics.
And we're afraid to go outside because maybe the sun will give us cancer.
It does give you cancer. I'm here to tell.
Hemingway went to Africa. We won't leave the front door.
Well, you know, I know you're a meat eater. I'm a meat eater. Judy, you're omnivore too, right?
Hell yeah.
This is what I say to the vegetarians. The zebra eats the lion, okay? Or the lion eats the zebra, rather. So what's your problem with the lion? You know, this is why God put us on Earth. This is why we're at the top of the food chain. Ego.
That's what Ben Franklin said. Ben Franklin was actually a vegetarian until one day he was on a boat and someone caught a fish and opened up the fish and there was another fish inside of it. And he said, well, that's just the way of the world. And Ben Franklin was a pimp, so.
Yes, he was.
He absolutely was. He actually invented the pornographic category of MILF with his attract a mistress, advice for a young man. He recommends that men should date older women who don't want to get married and can't have kids.
I didn't even know that. That's really, that's something.
This is in the very first issue of a Playboy one. Hugh Hefner, one of his contemporaries, Ben Franklin.
Equally perverted.
You guys got any thoughts on the Hefner non-wedding?
I think that woman had some good timing. Her iTunes song came out that day, the Runaway Bride. I think they'll sell some issues. I don't even know how men can tell those women apart anymore. They're all... They all look the same to me.
Well, this is awful. And here's something, you know, a trend that's awful is like men shaving all their body hair off. And the women, too, of course, in Playboy haven't had hair since day one. You know, they look like mannequins, and now men are shaving their chest hair.
I think Marty knows a little something about waxing.
Well, yeah. Right. For the Huffington Post, I did a video where...
There's video of this?
Yes, there is. We went around New York, and I was giving a tour of all the things Hemingway would hate about modern American men. So we went by Jamba Juice and yoga studios and on, the Nintendo store. And I was saying, Nintendo, Hemingway liked playing a game. It was called War.
With real guns, with real right? bullets.
Or instead of a Wii controller and just hunting with that and shooting with that. And the video culminates with, we go to a spa for men. And I say, and this was actually cut, this part was cut from the video, but I say, what men are doing today, instead of putting hair on our balls, we're taking it off our balls. So I'm going to do literally, to make a point, I'm going to do literally what we're all doing metaphorically. And a nice Asian gentleman pulled the hair out of my flesh, the hair that had been there since I hit about 12, 13.
It sounds like a combination between Jackass and Anthony Weiner.
Right, and I thought I thought I would have to sell this for the camera. Like, I would have to scream extra hard to really sell it, to make it work on camera. You got to exaggerate a little. There was no exaggeration. It hurt that much.
Yeah.
Well, let me ask you, did he cup your balls gently?
He was very gentle, and there was actually a nice little massage on the chest with some oil afterward. It was very soothing.
Didn't they slap their hand down after they pulled the wax out? And don't you have more sympathy for women now?
I guess I do. The most painful part actually wasn't having the hair ripped out. It was the itchy, painful red dots that were all over my body for like 3 or 4 days straight. And I kept slathering lotion on.
Yeah.
I mean, well, I do that anyway, but specifically...
you are a moisturizer, huh?
Well,
that's not very Hemingway.
Itch cream. I mean, it was like herpes all over my chest.
It probably was a form of herpes because you went to a dirty, dirty place. If you have to pay extra for the fresh wax. Otherwise, you get other people's cooties inside of you.
No way, dude.
Yeah, they're
no
opening...
No way.
Yeah, when you get those little raised bumps, it's somebody else's nasty.
I don't have a problem.
I mean, somebody else's nasty inside of me. That's like the night they legalized gay marriage.
And what a night that was. And what a night that was. Seriously. You know, except for the part that I don't like having sex with other men, I think I'd be a great gay guy.
I think that's a pretty big part.
Yeah.
And plus,
aren't
most of your friends women anyway?
You know, I do love women. I don't know if most of my friends are women. And, you know, here, I think, you know, your central thesis of your book, and Hemingway, too, it seems to be an anti-woman agenda here. And, look, let's face it. Women rule the world. Women are smarter.
Women
pussy
do not rule
is
the world.
Undefeated. I mean, when has the pussy ever lost? Ever.
The pussy loses every day.
Oh, yeah?
Don't make me get shrill.
Or hysterical.
As is my way. But Marty is an engaged man. So.
Hey, Jack, you have that clip for us? Yeah, engaged man. I think this is when I was reading Marty's book. This is what I was thinking of.
The meeting is now in order. We all know that McGillicuddy girl gave a party the other day, and not one of us was invited. Now, what do you say if we form a new club and call it the He-Man Woman Hairs Club? Now, I think we ought to have a president. Now, the man we elect must be the worst woman hater of us all. So I nominate Alfalfa because he hates women.
But along with Alfalfa, Hemingway seemed to have kind of a low opinion of women. Why did he get married four times?
Yeah, I was going to say, Hemingway didn't hate women. He loved women. He loved them enough to marry four of them.
and divorce four of them, or three of them. Anyway.
Divorce three of them, yeah. Well, what a lot of Hemingway's woman issues might come back to, when he was a kid, his mother, who was kind of crazy, dressed him in pink dresses.
Like Charles Manson's mother.
Oh,
and you think that may have had some latent psychological effects?
And flowered bonnets, and made him grow his hair as long
and
as his sister's.
Flower bonnets?
Yeah, and made him grow his hair as long as his sister's. And when he was 4 years old, Hemingway didn't know that people knew he was a boy. He assumed people thought he was a girl. And as I say in the book, this maybe had something, just something to do with his lifelong quest to prove his masculinity to everybody on Earth.
And what was his loving nickname for his mother?
That bitch. There was one of his contemporaries who said they'd never met anyone who truly despised their mother until they met Hemingway.
Well, it sounds like she was pretty despisable. Yet he did keep getting married, and he did keep cheating on them, too. And what was it, slapped one?
Right, and there was one, he was in World War II over there sort of as a correspondent slash, well, that we'll get to that story in a minute.
Okay.
But his wife was there. This was his third wife, and she was a war correspondent as well. She was a writer as well. And they had a lot of professional jealousy in their relationship. Mm-hmm. And so, to steal one of her stories, he took a plane from one location to another and made her ride on a ship laden with dynamite and a cargo ship with a bunch of dynamite while he took a safe plane.
He was a charmer.
So do we think short sentences are more macho than long sentences?
He would love Twitter. 140. So many of his great quotes are 140 characters or less.
And then you have a guy like Norman Mailer, like, you know, possibly más macho than Mr. Hemingway, whose idea of a short sentence lasted for 4 or 5 pages.
Right.
Also, a serial marrier.
Slash wife stabber.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, his first great book is very famously about shooting his wife.
God. Why were so many famous male writers kind of women haters?
Well, let me quote something here from Marty's book, and maybe this will help explain. Women exhale bullshit like men exhale carbon dioxide.
I think men are far more prone to bullshitting than women are.
I'm telling you, the pussy wins every time.
That's because
when has a man ever brought a woman down from power?
When has a woman been in power to bring down?
Well, you know, actually, I think maybe those tables are turning. We have the new pantsuit generation of female powerful political
pantsuit
people.
Pantsuit generation.
Right? We have the, you know, the president of Germany or the prime minister, whatever her title is. And, of course, Hillary Clinton, who is possibly the most powerful woman in America now that Oprah's off TV.
Ha. Well, you know, my book is an anti-woman. It's really more pro-man. It's really about...
I'm not a racist. I just like white people better.
Oh,
what's wrong with being sexy?
Exactly.
I mean, the book is really saying, what's become of men? We are becoming vegetarians and becoming...
Or vegans.
Vegans.
That's indefensible.
And we're going to Alcoholics Anonymous.
For quitters.
Yes, we're a bunch of quitters and a bunch of sissies, and this has nothing to do with women, and I love women, I'm going to marry one. This book isn't about hating women, it's about standing up for ourselves as men.
Well, I'm always disturbed by the man in the yoga studio more than any other, like, pussification.
The pussification is harsh. The first time I saw a man smoking a Parliament cigarette, I mean, this really shocked me to my very core. I mean, since when did that become a man's brand? Okay, men, with the exception of Galois, should never smoke white-tip cigarettes. It's wrong. And that recessed filter, you know what that means.
I do not.
I'm telling you.
I would think that, well, never mind. Okay, so there was this. The Times ran a story about a year ago about the caveman diet. Would Ernest approve of this?
He would approve of hunting a saber-toothed tiger with a spear and eating that. What you mean by the caveman diet.
Not keeping a giant side of beef in your freezer in your Upper West Side apartment?
No, he preferred to get the meat himself. And what's really interesting, Hemingway believed in getting the meat himself because he wanted to appreciate what died for him. It was sort of a DIY aesthetic.
He also didn't he enjoy watching things die, maybe?
Well, he enjoyed killing them, yes.
He was a big fan of the bullfights, of course.
I mean, right,
Death in the Afternoon, a very famous work on bullfights. And the premise of a bullfight, of course, is that the bull is brave and dies nobly.
Yes.
That's something that would be very contrary, I think, to the pussified man of today, actually the most sane and rational people. But that is the concept of a bullfight, is that the bull dies bravely. It's a toro bravo.
Hemingway would hate factory farming. He really believed in free-range organic meat. He just preferred to kill it himself in the jungle.
Much like the people here at the Heritage Food Network.
Exactly.
Farm to table. You know, actually, I mean, it's trendy now, but really, nothing could be more old-fashioned.
Exactly. What could be more free-range than the wild outdoors?
We're still waiting for our magician to call.
I think that I'm going to have to change my voice and pretend that I am.
Yeah, he has vanished. I'll tell you what, why don't we take a short break? We got a song to play one more time. This is the Mike and Judy Show on the Heritage Radio Network. This is I'm a Man.
Service announcement from Heritage Radio Network. Take a swig of Beer Sessions Radio every Tuesday at 5 p.m. with Jimmy Carboni, the owner of Jimmy's Number 43, and Ray Dieter, owner of DBA. Beer-loving raconteurs offer toasts, share craft beer news, and swap anecdotes about their lives on the front lines of the craft beer movement. Again, Beer Sessions Radio every Tuesday at 5 p.m. on the Heritage Radio Network.
We're back with Mike Edison and Marty Beckerman. Marty, one of my favorite quotes in your book was from Germaine Greer, who is not like a real yuckster normally, but Ernest Hemingway, when his cock wouldn't stand up, he blew his head off. He sold himself on a line of bullshit and bought it. That's really sad. Is that truly why he blew his head off, because he couldn't get it up?
Well, he did say that if a man continues to eat meat, he'll be able to perform sexually well into his 70s and 80s, so... hopefully Hemingway kept eating meat later in life. Why did he kill himself? His mind was kind of going. He couldn't write anymore.
Right.
He struggled to write three sentences. He'd lost his greatest skill. Well, drinking was his greatest skill. But the doctors told him not to drink anymore, and he compromised to a diet of just having tequila for breakfast.
Instead of, what, three
and
bottles
bourbon
of
bourbon for breakfast. Exactly. That's not even a joke. So the book, The Hemingway, is it's humor and it's parody, but sometimes it's really hard to tell where the biography ends and where the joke starts.
Yeah.
Because it's true. He agreed to compromise to a breakfast of champagne and bourbon and gin and tequila. Well,
it sounds to me like Hemingway, like Hugh Hefner, is what we call in the wrestling business a mark for his own gimmick. In other words, he's created this persona so much that he's buying into it, and he's buying into his own shtick. And once you've gone down that road, it's hard to escape.
He had to become the cartoon character. I think a similar thing happened with Hunter S. Thompson, whom I interviewed in 2003. And it's actually really haunting. Hunter Thompson wrote this thing in the 70s where he went to Hemingway's house and wrote this whole thing trying to figure out why did Hemingway kill himself? Why did Hemingway kill himself? And many of the reasons that Thompson pontificated upon, if you read that now, knowing what we know about Hunter Thompson, is just really terrifying, really haunting, about being trapped in your own cartoon character and having to meet the public's expectations and seeing your body dissolve and seeing your writing talent. Even though, actually, some of the stuff Hunter was writing toward the end, people thought it was total mush at the time. The post-9/11 stuff and the anti-Bush stuff, at the time, people thought it was crazy, but if you go back, it's brilliant, and it's 10 years ahead of its time.
Well, people were slagging him, too, when he was writing for ESPN, I think it was.
Exactly.
And he was writing that column, and the Generation of Swine book, which was a compilation of columns. And it's, you know, he started leaning on his own tricks a little bit too much. A little bit too much of the Book of Revelation, a little bit too much of the obvious tropes of the Gonzo thing, and obviously it was wasted. But when you go back and read it, the energy is flawless. I mean, it's really very much that big rock and roll rush in 700-word bursts, which is a fine way to read Hunter Thompson.
Yeah, did you go out to Colorado to interview him?
No, I interviewed him in New York City. He wouldn't do the interview unless I brought him drugs at 2 in the morning. It's kind of a long story. I was in college then. It wasn't difficult.
You know, the times I've met Hunter Thompson twice were at, speaking engagements
right.
at colleges. And invariably, though, he's there and trying, and incomprehensible, has a giant, bucket of ice and Chivas Regal and lots of ice. And I think at Columbia, he had a shotgun on the table with him. Totally incomprehensible, but doesn't stop the kids. Basically, all they want to do is raise their hands. And you think an intelligent question is coming. They're on the campus of an Ivy League school. And all the kid says is, hey, man, want to do some drugs after the show?
Exactly. I think he was trapped in that a bit and probably resented it. Maybe he had to play that for the crowds, but he was a really, really brilliant man, a really incredibly intelligent guy.
Who met a similar fate. Self-inflicted fate to Papa Hemingway.
Right. At one point, I had two posters over my writing desk. One was of Hunter Thompson, and the other was of Hemingway. And one day, I looked up, and I'm like, I have two suicides looking down at me. This is creepy. This is kind of creepy, and I took them down, sadly.
Yeah, it might be time for some inspirational hang-in-there-kitty posters.
And what about this the craze of these cute kitty pictures all over Facebook? I mean,
Hemingway was a cat fan.
He was a big cat fan.
Oh, yeah, he would have loved YouTube and watching all the kitties playing with string, as long as they had six toes.
Wait, you're right, because that's right. But do you see Hemingway looking at what's the
LOL cat.
LOL cat and I has cheeseburger. And I was very proud to see your cat on the cheeseburger site celebrating.
Inky is celebrating gay marriage.
It's awesome. And, of course, today is Gay Pride Day.
Yay.
And to celebrate, I see you're wearing flip-flops.
I didn't bring my merce today.
You know, I mean, I think men should never wear flip-flops. The male flip-flop is wrong. Marty's toes are okay. I'm not looking at them.
I didn't manscape my toes, so at least there's that.
No, my boyfriend has, like, hobbit toenails that are practically curved down and click as he hits the floor, and he still sometimes wears flip-flops. That is wrong. Men need to pay more attention to their toenails.
I think the male clog is an improvement over the male flip-flop.
I disagree.
I don't think men should wear sandals. I think Jesus Christ, or maybe Julius Caesar was the last guy who could do it, right?
I don't like the sandals, but flip-flops, it looks like you're on your way to something, like the beach.
Well, if you're at the beach, it's okay. You know, the way I grew up in New York City, I was told that you had to buy shoes and things that were tough, that lasted, that the city was going to, beat up on you, and it was a dirty place. So the idea of walking down the street in 99-cent sandals, to me, it makes no sense. My brain rejects it. Sort of like the first time Ted Nugent heard reggae music. His brain just rejected that shit.
People have been asking me, who's our modern Hemingway? And I guess I say the closest we come maybe is Ted Nugent, except that he doesn't drink, so he can never be Papa's equal.
I love the Ted Nugent not drinking gimmick. You know, the no drugs, no drinking. Yeah, I do think it's true. But he was a draft dodger, which seems kind of contrary to his whole story.
That's not very Hemingway.
Right? Mm. He went down to, I guess they were in Ann Arbor or Detroit, where, in Michigan, where they're from.
Right.
When he was playing this Motor City Band. What were they called again? Please?
Oh, God, I don't know.
Anyway, he went down there and he said he took a bunch of speed and some acid and frankly shit himself and they put a needle in his arm. And he went home and ate a few bison steaks and some cheese and some beans and was back to being young, rockin' Ted. But he took drugs to dodge the draft.
Hemingway would have taken drugs because they were fun.
Well, Hemingway actually went headfirst into war three times. Yeah. He was in World War I as an ambulance driver because he couldn't get into the military.
There's something wrong with that, too.
Because of his vision, they wouldn't let him into the military. Because an ambulance driver doesn't need to see straight, of course.
No.
And then he was in the Spanish Civil War and hanging out with the guerrilla fighters there. And then in World War II, I said I'd get to this story. So he went over there. He was a worldwide celebrity by this point. A mess. He was like the William Shatner of his time. He was just a ubiquitous presence everywhere. And he was over there, this mass worldwide celebrity, and he convinced all these American generals and admirals that he was a brilliant war strategist. And they gave him bazookas and grenade launchers and guns because he told them what he was going to do. He was going to take his boat, the Pilar. He was going to take his boat and chase Nazi submarines with it. He was going to hunt Nazi submarines.
From his boat.
With a bazooka.
And the generals and the admirals were like, well, he he's written all these books about war. He must be...
he must know.
So they gave him all this artillery. What he did was he went out to the middle of the ocean and he took the grenades and he threw them out there and fish would pop up and he called it grenade fishing.
I like it. I'd like to have a shoulder-mounted rocket launcher. I've always kind of wanted one. Or a tank, maybe, would be kind of cool.
Go ask Ted Nugent. He might have.
He probably does have one.
Where I lost it with Ted is I really thought that was, a good angle. Okay, the guy says, I don't need drugs because I rock so hard. Adrenaline is my drug. I mean, it gets a little silly when he's firing drummers for getting stoned after the show.
Yeah.
But I like Ted's thing. I've seen him play. blowing a drugged up Aerosmith off the stage back in the day when Aerosmith could barely tune their guitars. And Ted, who's totally sober, I mean, just mopped it up, comes swinging onto the stage, wearing a loincloth, and by the end of the show, he's shooting flaming arrows into his amplifiers. But where he lost me recently is all this Tea Party garbage.
Right,
this
right.
Speak yeah. English or die shit. I mean, it turned dark in a way that I cannot support, unfortunately.
Yeah, I agree. But in the past decade, back in the aughts, he had this reality show. It was like a game show where he'd have vegans and vegetarians on there. And this one episode, one of the games, I'm pretty sure I'm not making this up. I was pretty not sober back then, but I'm pretty sure this actually happened. One of the games on his reality show was he would chase vegans with a truck, and they had to dodge his truck.
I think that's awesome. I think we should play a game. You guys want to play a game?
Sure, let's play a game.
Let's play Quien Es Más Macho. Hey, Jack, you got any music for Quien Es Más Macho? Maybe some Mike and Judy music for Quien Es Más Macho? All right, let's start off with an easy one. Quien Es Más Macho, Elton John or Rod Stewart?
I don't know if Elton John would do those covers of the Great American Songbook that my mom buys, so I'm going to go with Elton John.
You think, but Rod just did a... That's right. That's a good point.
And Rod had Do Ya Think I'm Sexy.
Yeah, Do Ya. You think it's the Ya, Do Ya?
Yeah, I think it's Elton John as the winner.
On a tangent, I'm trying to, this is the decade, I'm going to take back the word fabulous for straight men.
I didn't know.
No, it's been a gay thing for at least 10 years. I mean, my gay brothers and sisters can have fab, they can have fabu, but fabulous I'm taking back.
You go, girl.
How was the Mike and Judy show last night? Fabulous. Okay, Quien Es Más Macho? Bob Weir or Johnny Weir?
Johnny Weir. I love Johnny Weir. Bob Weir can, you know...
The most useless man in rock, I agree. I mean, which is more difficult, to play a version of Sugar Magnolia or to do that triple axel?
Whatever. Yeah, I love Johnny Weir.
This is just blowing your macho brain, isn't it?
Johnny Weir is the skater, and Bob Weir is from the
Grateful Dead, I think he's the most dead, macho, right? Because he didn't Grateful know who dead, either right? of them were.
He's too macho to know, you know, because ice hockey always better than ice capades.
Yeah, I don't know much about skating, and I don't know much about the Grateful Dead, so...
So you win.
Metallica. Let's talk Metallica. Just kidding.
Quien Es Más Macho, the Brady Bunch or the Partridge Family?
Partridge Family. I love them.
Really? I'm going for the Brady Bunch on this one. Did you see the story in today's paper about Mrs. Brady
catching crabs from
Mary Lindsay? I wish hope Al Goldstein's reading that story. His arch enemy. Lindsay.
Carol Brady?
No, Mary Lindsay. Okay. Rip Taylor or Taylor Swift?
Okay. Taylor Swift. No, Rip Taylor would win that.
I love Rip Taylor.
I like Rip Taylor,
I love
too.
Rip Taylor. We need confetti on this show. Okay, here's a tricky one. Crosby, Stills, or Nash?
Young.
All right. And here for you art students in the audience, Monet or Manet?
Monet.
I like Monet better.
There's nothing.
I don't know much about French things. Actually, Hemingway liked French things, so.
Wow, French frilly things. But there's really nothing gayer than Impressionism, truly. And the last one for you.
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
For our special guest today, Marty Beckerman, Quien Es Más Macho, Mike or Judy?
I'm going to call it a tie. Who's buying me beer and pizza afterward?
That's right.
We're splitting it.
All right.
Okay, I'm going to go with a tie then.
All right, the tag team that cannot be beat. It's the Mike and Judy Show. Thanks once again to the Heritage Food Network, Roberta's, and our special guest, Marty Beckerman. And if that's a new magician who hope you're listening who didn't call in, 86.
Where can we get your book, Marty, before we go?
Amazon.com.
The Hemingway.
All right, I'm on my way to the Gay Pride Parade.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.
This is Behind the Scenes Food News with Katie Kiefer. This particular article comes from Grist, which is a wonderful website. To satisfy the legal system's pesky demand for environmental impact studies of novel GMO crops, the USDA has settled upon the brilliant solution. Let the GMO industry conduct its own environmental impact studies or pay other researchers to do so. The USDA announced the program in the Federal Register for April 7th, 2011. Of course, the biotech and agrochemical industry has applauded the new plan. Karen Batra of the Biotechnology Industry Organization told the Oregon-based Ag Journal Capital Press that the program will likely speed up the registration process for GMO crops and make the USDA's approval less vulnerable to legal challenges. Capital Press summed up Batra's assessment of the plan like this. The pilot program will not only help move crops through the process more quickly, but the added resources will also help the documents hold up in court. In other words, the industry plans to produce studies that find its novel products environmentally friendly and fully expects the USDA to accept their assessments. This has been Behind the Scenes Food News with Katie Kiefer.
Nicole Taylor is always the first to talk with new and exciting personalities in the food world on her show, Hot Grease. Check out a little clip.
Everything is super sweet in the Heritage Radio Network studios today. We're chatting with Fanny Gearson. Fanny is a graduate of the Culinary Institute of America and the 2011 James Beard Foundation Cookbook Award nominee. Oh my God, we fry in Bed-Stuy. We have to talk dough. Donuts. I'm going to have to say, Fanny, I don't know if you know this. I was definitely the first person in Brooklyn to start talking about dough. Did you know that?
I knew that last time I saw you. But I didn't know that before.
So we have to talk dough. I mean, it is a bona fide phenomenon in Brooklyn.
I'm so excited to be part of it. I can't believe it.
You know? I mean, I was just telling you before the show that I think about a month ago, I went to dough on a Sunday at 2 o'clock and all the donuts
You like what
gone.
You hear? You can hear Hot Grease every Monday at 3:30 p.m. live on HeritageRadioNetwork.com. Make sure to subscribe to the podcast or check it out in our archives.